Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for growing engineering teams. As always, this episode is brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, providers of technical staffing and software development services in Latin America for clients globally. We all know that AI can write code, but it's not great at architecting a system, making product decisions, or iterating based on what your customers actually need. BuilderPods by AgilityFeet combine the best of both worlds. Senior human engineering experience and cutting-edge AI tooling. This combination of experienced teams and AI-native workflows is built to ship high-quality and valuable software faster than ever before, at a reasonable price and using talent in the North American time zones. It's time to meet your BuilderPod. Each of our BuilderPods are a small, senior, AI-powered nearshore team that builds fast without the bloat. Reserve a dedicated pod for your next product launch, Skunkworks project, or proof of concept. Each pod has particular expertise and experience, but they can all work across many tech stacks and industries. For a fixed low price, you get two core team members dedicated to your success. And in addition to AI tooling, that core team can tap into the rest of AgilityFeet's experienced human talent for roles like UX, design, DevOps, and QA. Because these teams are built to ship fast, we only require a two-week initial commitment, and you can keep extending the team as long as you need. This allows you to go from interest to launch in days with no lengthy procurement process and lots of opportunities to iterate on customer feedback. Software development has changed, and at AgilityFeet, we have adapted. Yes, it's true that AI tools make coding faster, but the hard parts haven't gone away of building cohesive and beautiful applications that your users will love and which you can scale your business around. And that's exactly where BuilderPods shine. Learn more by visiting agilityfeet.com. Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Syme. For today's episode, I'm delighted to have my friend and colleague, Hector Zelaya, here with me. Welcome, Hector.
Hey there. Thank you for having me, Aaron. It's a great honor to be in your podcast.
Oh, it's an honor to have you working in our team. So Hector works with us at AgilityFeet and WebRTC Ventures. He writes a lot of the blog posts that we see on there. In fact, there's a blog post related to today's episode that you can see. But let me tell you a little bit more about Hector. He is a DevOps engineer, technical leader, AWS certified developer in our teams. And when he's not shipping software for our clients, he's in his home studio making music, which is another thing I really admire about him because I have zero talent musically and there's no amount of AI that would help me in that for sure. But in today's episode of the Scaling Tech Podcast, Hector is going to give us a live demonstration of how he uses AI tools and spec-driven workflows to supercharge music production without surrendering the human creativity at the center of it all. And we're going to come back and connect those same ideas to the software development lifecycle, which is another area that I know Hector and I both believe in supercharging without losing the human creativity at the center. That's super important. So I think there's a lot of parallels you're going to see between these two worlds. So it's going to be a fun conversation. And this episode is a bit more visual than our usual conversations at the Scaling Tech Podcast, since Hector is going to do some demos for us. So if you're listening to an audio-only version of this, you might want to switch to the video version on Spotify or watch this episode on YouTube in order to get the full effect of everything. So let's jump into it. But before we go into the demo side of things, Hector, we've been working together nearly a decade now. Share a little bit of your origin story, your superhero origin story with us. How did a computer systems engineer end up as a musician also? Kind of which came first, I guess. Do those worlds feel kind of like separate or connected for you?
Yeah, well, music always have been something special for me, and it's been a big part of my whole life. Music is how I learn English, actually. Music actually came first. I started playing the keyboard, writing songs at a very early age, And then when I grew up, well, being a musician doesn't exactly make you rich, Salvador. So I had to go with the next best thing, which is software engineering, which I enjoy. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it has always been there, and I always striving to being able to do something with it, and yeah, that's how, rather than a computer engineer becoming a musician, it's more of a musician becoming a computer systems engineer.
That's cool that you learned a lot of English from listening to music. I didn't know that. I've definitely heard from some of our other colleagues who for whom English is their second language, learning from like the TV show Friends, for example. I've heard that one a couple of times from watching that. For me, Spanish is my second language. I've also learned a good amount of Spanish from music, but I've learned I have to be careful because some of the music I listen to, I learn things I shouldn't say in a professional setting.
Yeah, for sure.
More seriously, so when did you, on the music side, at what point did you start thinking, like, I want to bring AI into my music workflow? Was there like a specific frustration you were running into, some kind of a light bulb moment that you had?
Yeah, so I'm a musician, not a producer, which are two different, completely different things. A producer has to be, or it's better if a producer is a musician, though. There's a distinction to be made there. But yeah, and what that means, it means that if I write a song, I can play it and I can do whatever I want with it, but I don't have the ability to take that and become an artifact that I can distribute on the radio or the Spotify. There's a high barrier to do that because even if I know some of the basic stuff and how they work, I don't have the ability to like, let me get this the program, process it, the compressors are FX mastering chain. I know what it has to be done, but I don't know how to do it. And at first, that was like the first frustration. And actually, the songs that I have right now on Spotify, or at least the first song, are my amateur attempt for trying to make the music I made into actual songs. If you go, you will hear a lot of strange noises or maybe like it doesn't have like the right settings. And that was like the first barrier because I didn't know how to move myself into the actual production. Now, as a software engineer, I started working with this new monster that has read all the internet and that understand natural language instructions. And there's a light bulb turning on and saying, hey, I can use this to translate what I know about how a song should sound, how I should process this, even if I don't know how to do it, and start lowering that barrier and start doing something more, let's say, professional, in the sense that it will have the quality of what a real producer will create.
Nice, I love it. And maybe there's a parallel a little bit here already that we can draw then between AI in music and AI in software development. Because, you know, one thing I caught that you said there, that it's helpful when a producer is also a musician. Maybe not necessarily a requirement, but helpful if they have that background too, right? And you could say somewhat similar here, that if we think of in the software development world as AI helping us with a lot of things and bringing skills to kind of opening up programming to maybe to people who didn't have a software engineering background in the past, but it's still really helpful if they have that you know, that yeah. understanding of the art behind it, right? In the same way
Definitely.
That a producer who understands the art of music is similar to someone, you know, doing spec-driven development, but they still understand the art. And I think there is a lot of art in software engineering too.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's talk a little bit. There's kind of an elephant in the room here that I want to address, right? Because there is a backlash against AI in a lot of industries, and creative industries in particular, and in music, and artists who understandably worry about their work being scraped by a model, algorithms flooding streaming platforms with, you know, completely AI generated music, trying to just hit some magical demographic that will create the, you know, the most amount of money for them on that streaming platform, right? But, you know, not necessarily an artistic intent. And I know you share some of those concerns. So how do you think about, in the context of music, how do you think about AI as a tool rather than a threat?
Well, first of all, these are all valid concerns. And I think any kind of artist should get recognition when their content is being used to train these models. And I know that some companies are starting to move into that direction. And I think that's a good thing. And the other thing is that, yeah, you can use AI to skip the whole creative process and go in and generate something completely with AI. I know that there is a market for that. And in a way, artists are competing against that.
Sure.
Therefore, I think it's required that artists, in order to be able to compete, should also, and same as with technology companies that are competing against other companies that are using AI to boost the software product development. Mm-hmm. In the same way, I think artists should take advantages of the automation and augmentation capabilities of AI in order to also boost their music creation process.
You know, by the way, I mentioned a blog post up about this. It's up at agilityfeed.com that will go into some more details on a lot of the topics that we're discussing in this too, and show some of the code examples that Hector will show in this conversation also. And one thing you do in that blog post is you make a distinction that with code, the values in the utility, right? Like if you, even though there may be art behind writing a really good sorting algorithm, people don't generally care about that, right?
It is definitely, but yeah.
Right, exactly. We as engineers can appreciate that, but the end users of our applications wouldn't necessarily. But music is a little bit different, perhaps in this regards that, you know, the execution and the nuance, the nuance of what's created is the value, right? So is there anything about that distinction that shapes the way you use AI in your creative process?
Yeah, sure. So AI is really good at imitating language, and mm-hmm. if you prompt it correctly, it can even imitate emotion. However, it's important to understand that it's just imitating, because
it's imitating,
under
yeah.
the hood, it's all raw numbers. I mean, the machine right. doesn't know that what it's doing, because it's all mathematics under the hood. So yeah. in that regard, what gives best results, at least for me, is keeping the emotion and the creativity as a human thing. And mm-hmm. and that's how we retain the control of what we are generating. And that's mm-hmm. the core that should drive AI-assisted music creation. In the same way, quality and best practices drives AI-assisted code generation.
Exactly. And so, and that's another thing in your blog post that you described really well, and I ask you to kind of give a summary for now, is kind of how you think about the different roles that you can use AI. And you talk about three roles: a reasoning partner, the Tedium Terminator, which is a great name, and the Session Band. So walk us through what each of those roles looks like.
So first of all, when I'm writing, I like to, well, one of the things that I like to do in my lyrics is say things without saying directly.
It's right.
It's something
like a good
very
poet,
difficult,
right?
Yeah, it's something very difficult to do. And I like to like, and I do this for writing blog posts too, like adding subtle references to some facts or use metaphors. And that is something that I do with tools like Gemini or ChatGPT, where I can bounce some ideas and say, hey, tell me some facts about this and how to say that in a lyrical fashion and all that stuff. Yeah. So I can get facts, I can get suggestions on words, or even ask for non-traditional chord progressions of using a specific scale. I think those things that will help us to overcome the writer's blockage, mm-hmm. so that I can take ideas and start building what I want. I think that's a very nice use case for AI, since it has read all the internet and can save us from manually searching all that stuff. I think that's a good use case. And then once I have the idea, I have my chord progression, I have my melody, there is some tedium, at least it is for me. I'm sure there will be someone out there who actually enjoy opening the software and setting up. But I personally don't do it. I don't enjoy it. And that's another use case where we can instruct an AI agent, provide relevant tools so that it can set up the tracks, add all the effect chains, adjust all the compressors, just the equalizer and all that stuff. That's another great use case. So I can focus on making music, focus on writing, focus on making sure that the message that I want to transmit, it's done effectively in the song that I'm performing. And there's a third one in which I know how to play keyboards, I know how to play guitar, and I can play it, but I know how to play drums, but I can't play drums. I can't play bass, but I know how to do it. I have a good idea of what I want for a song. And in this case, there are some AI services such as Suno, that is Google Lyria, that is capable of actually generating accompanying tracks that mm-hmm. you can use in order to help you with the arrangement of your song. So that's a third use case on which when I have my song structure and I want a bass track or a drum track, and I'm not a good drummer, I can generate those tracks based on the structure that I have, and yeah, it's another use case that where we can leverage that content generation capabilities.
All right. Well, why don't we let's get into a little music creation, and why don't you show us a little bit about how this works live?
Sure. So first of all, this is done using two main pieces. One is all the magic of music happens in a software called Digital Audio Workstation. In this case, the one that I like is called Reaper. It's a very lightweight. And the core feature that makes all this possible is that Reaper actually exposes a powerful API that I can access programmatically. And I do that using an AI agent, and which in this case is the one that comes with the Kiro IDE. Now, why am I using an IDE? Clearly, a software development focused tool. I will go that. I will go into that in just a second. But yeah, I use this AI agent to control DAW, the digital audio workstation, so that it performs actions on my behalf. And that is possible thanks to the first piece is an MCP server, which is the universal USB-C cable for connecting AI to everything. And this is an MCP server that was originally developed by 12 Take Studios. I did a fork and added some improvements, some bug fixes, and some new tools that I needed at the moment. And this is open source. It's available on GitHub. Now, there's a second piece, which is the Reaper Power, because Kiro is a software development tool. It's not for music production. Now, why am I using it for music production? There are two things. One is that it is a spec-driven development focused tool. It supports spec-driven development natively. And why is this important? Because, as I said before, I am letting an AI agent, I am giving it the keys to my project, and I want to make sure that it doesn't mess up things. I want to be completely sure that it will behave as I expect, and the best thing, and the best way to do that is through a spec-driven development, because in spec-driven development we have a shared contract of what the human and the AI will understand. So that's the first reason, and the second reason is because there is a nice feature called Kiro Power, on which I can specifically set the right context for the agent, so it behaves and does the things I expected to do. So I have this Reaper DAO power that I also built. It is available on GitHub. It is open source. And what this power does is that it makes or it becomes Kiro an expert producer. It helps it to talk the language that a producer will understand. And it lists all the available tools and all that Kiro needs in order to control my Reaper DAW. And very importantly is that Kiro is somehow hard-coded to create coding specs. And using this power, we are actually steering or modifying that behavior so that it doesn't produce coding specs, but instead tool usage specs, so that it can focus on controlling Reaper. Now, with that said, I already have a project of my new song. This is actually a rock song, so hope you like it. And yeah, and I have my Reaper project connected to Kiro. I already created a spec, and just in case you don't know how Kiro manages specs, it creates three files. It creates a requirements file on which it lists all the requirements for the spec. In this case, this is a spec for processing the lead voice track. So I want to process my voice so it sounds as it should sound. It lists all the requirements here, and it uses or it draws the requirements as user stories using the EARS syntax. So as an example here, it is saying that I want to have an EQ effects on my lead vocal so that we make sure that is that it has clarity, brightness, and the vocal sounds clean and present in the mix. And it creates a requirement for each of the components that, or the processing that it would apply to the voice. As a human in the loop, as a as the expert, or creativity driven human in the loop, I need to review this and make sure that it won't do anything out of what is expected, and make sure that this spec, this shared contract, is what I expect it to be. Once I'm happy with this, I can continue and go with the design, on which Kiro outlines the actual step that it's going to take. In a traditional coding spec, Kiro will list here all the interfaces, all the data models for the code. But in this case, since we are explicitly telling that it should behave as a producer and using a tool usage approach, it is just listing the steps. It is listing all the tracks and all the effects that it's going to add to these tracks, and all the values that it's going to adjust.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I noticed sure. there a little higher up on the page where you were specifically saying, this is not a software project. There's no software to write. You know, the architecture of this is a set of instructions for rewrite.
Correct.
So you're, so yeah, it's interesting seeing this through the eyes of a software developer, that you're really calling that out separately, and being very clear in that prompt that you're giving it basically in the spec.
And yeah, and as a result, we have this very detailed list of steps. So for the phase one, it says that it's gonna insert a plugin called Re-EQ on the track zero after the current re-attune and before the other plugin. And it's gonna configure the bands using a high pass and making a crescent boost and everything in a language that the producer or a musician who knows what is looking or will understand and will apply manually in a traditional approach. And again, my role as the human in the loop is to review this, make sure that everything is in place and it won't be hallucinating and removing all the tracks all of a sudden. And when I'm happy with this, I can click continue, and it will generate a third file called task, which is the translation of the requirements and the design into atomic actionable items that the agent will perform in order to apply all the processing, in this case, because it's a spec for processing the vocals. But before this and beforehand, I also ran a spec for gain staging and mixing, so that I can have the right volume levels and make sure that everything sounds as it should sound. And then when I'm done with this, I can go with another spec for mastering or for anything that I would like to do to my song. So
you put in some very specific numbers in there too, I noticed, around you know, what gains you want and things like that. So, you know, the sort of the testing criteria is almost in a software context. And yeah, so this is where you would also say things like, if you want you know, auto tune applied to my voice, or you know,
right,
that sort of thing.
Yeah. And then it's just a matter of reviewing the task, making sure that everything is in place. And then I have two options. I can go task by task, execute one, and then go to Reaper and check all the settings, listen and check that everything goes well. Or we can do what I do, and is run all tasks and then focus on something else, focus on a new song, or focus on browsing and just give a quick look every now and then, just to make sure that everything is in place. And that's the key element, that we can automate all this stuff so we can focus on creative part.
Exactly.
So I will click run here, wait for some time. It will take some time though. It's not as fast as generating script, for instance, because these are actual actions that are being done in the software that I have running. So it's a translation of what I will do manually using the mouse or clicking approach. So we can see that it is currently starting with task 1.1. It's about inserting this re-EQ plugin, and it will start making all the adjustments there.
Nice. And so for those of you watching this, you'll probably, we'll edit out some of the pause or some of the delays here while Kiro works. So if you're doing this on your own, it'll probably take a little bit longer than you're hearing it in this podcast episode. But as you said, Hector, I mean, this allows, frees up your time to not do like the production side of this, and you can go around and work on your next song or marketing your songs or go write some code.
Yeah. If you've been curious, you will see that, and this is part of the instructions, because when there's a part in which the effects that we have here, in this case, in this window, we can see that my voice has 4 effects, and the order matters. So it is actually asking me, and this is because I explicitly state that if Kiro has issues trying to change the order, it will ask me to do it. So it actually did that. It has issue with the effects, so it's asking me to make the change and let it know so it can continue.
So Hector, while Kiro is out doing its work for you, this frees us up to talk about a couple other things. I mean, what are the parallels between what you've done in Kiro and what they would do in their daily work in a software development team?
I think the most important thing is that human in the loop is important. Mm-hmm. Because whether it's the emotion of a song or the X feature of the software, I think the human should still drive, because at least for now, we are the only ones that can reason on what is considered good output, right, and what is considered bad output. So in that regard, I think human in the loop is still important. And in this regard, for human in the loop to be effective, there has to be some shared contract between mm-hmm. what the human expect and what the AI should do. And spec-driven development is one way to achieve that shared contract. Of course, it's not a silver bullet. I mean, for something really small, probably it's an overkill. But at least for complex, long projects, which I'm sure the vast majority of the software development projects that we have worked on have those two characteristics, yeah. It's a good thing to have.
Yeah, I mean, the spec-driven approach where you give this detailed plan to the AI and allows for human reviews before any actual action is taken, right, it's a very deliberate guardrail. And I think we just saw one example of that in what you were demoing with Kiro when it wanted to apply the effects to your voice and it wasn't sure if it could apply them in the order that you were asking, and so it prompted you for a little bit of information. So that's a good real example we just saw in this demo of guardrail coming into play. Can you think of some other kind of guardrails that in the music side, or maybe a parallel to them in the software development side, that are really important in the spec-driven approach?
Yeah, I think in either way, the shared contract is important, but there's also important to have some sort of craft ethics in which whenever we get something generated with AI, there's a thought that we should have it, and how comfortable are we being credited or blamed by right. by that piece of content. And if we're not comfortable, then it's definitely something that we shouldn't merge into the code. And but if you are not comfortable, what steps or what actions should we take in order to be comfortable with that? Maybe applying certain best practice or making some adjustment or moving this to here. I think that's the guardrail.
There's an important thing there that you said about, if we're not comfortable with what it's doing, with getting the credit or the blame for what it's done, what would we need to do in order to be comfortable with it? So kind of adding in something else to the spec there, adding in another guardrail. And I think that's worth emphasizing, because in software development, and maybe you would say this is true in music as well, it's not really an option to not develop with AI at this point, right? Like, you can, an initial reaction for someone who's been building software for a long time may be that, these AI tools, I don't know, I'm not really comfortable with them, or they hallucinate too much, so I'm just not going to use them at all, right? That's one response, one reaction that a person could have to it. But that's not going to get you very far in the modern world, right? And so you can only get away with that reaction for a little while. And so then you kind of need to jump in and say, okay, well, maybe I'm not totally comfortable with what I'm getting from the tool. What would I need in order to feel more comfortable with it? What would I need? What other guardrail would I need to put in place, or spec do I need to kind of add in so that I will feel comfortable with the outcome of this tool and something that I can then, feel good about deploying into the real world. And so that's, I think that's a good philosophical matter, let's say, that, that you bring up there, that I think is definitely true in the software development side, because we just have to get more comfortable with the challenges and the opportunities that these tools bring for our industry and for our own roles, how they impact our roles.
I would like to show something. It is asking me to do something, and it's recommending, actually, what to do. So maybe we can...
let's go take a look.
Right now, the agent is applying the voice processing, and it has applied some specific equalization settings, and it is telling me that with these settings, there is something called sibilance, that is the where certain letters feel like more strong. So it is suggesting that we add a de-essing notch, which is something that will take those strong syllables or letters and make them more supple. It is asking me, how do I feel about it? And in this case, I think this is okay. So I will click yes.
Okay.
And I will click the submit answer. When this is done, we can take a shot and hear it, and we can ask it to take it back if we don't like. So I'm gonna click submit answer. Nice. And it will continue.
So Hector, while Kiro is still cooking your song here for us, when you've done this before, I mean, talk a little bit of, philosophically, I guess, again, when you produce a song this way, what does the final result feel like to you as an artist? I mean, does it still feel like your music?
Personally, and this is the way I think, of course, there could be someone that doesn't feel that way. And this gets back to what we were saying before, where you could use AI to do everything, from the lyrics, the messaging, the instrumentation, and the instrumental. But at least for me, I like to own the lyrics, the core messaging of the song, the overall structure, the chord progressions, the the melody. Those are things that I like to reserve to myself, to be something that I do in order to consider something as my own creation. Of course, I get some help from AI to get ideas for the lyrics, to get some words or some phrases to reorder. I can do that, but I like to think or I like to do that work on my own because it's what I enjoy the most. Now, what I left to AI is the bulk work of taking those ideas and converting into a master song or an audio artifact that I can then share on the music platforms. But yeah, this will depend on what each the person wants to achieve, definitely.
Well, Kiro is still cooking up a song for us based on your specs. Let's go a little more into the software development side of this and talk a little bit about your spec-driven development workflow for a software development project.
Sure. In here, I have, again, another Kiro window, but this is going to be for software development. And in this case, what I have is I ask Kiro to build a simple web-based note-taking application. Now, you could say, okay, you are giving Kiro a very vague requirement. How is this different from vibe coding? And the main difference is that it is, I gave it a very vague description, but the output of this description won't be actual code, but a specification where we will refine all the requirements and all the details and all the implementation details that I want Kiro to take into consideration when building this web-based note-taking application. And we can see the same thing that I just mentioned about music production. We see that there is a list of user stories for each of the requirements, such as I want to see all my notes, I want to create a new note, I want to edit, and yeah, everything that I want my note-taking application to do, and I have to review this in order to make sure that it complies to the requirements and the best practices that I want the application to have. When I'm happy with this, I can click on continue, and Kiro will generate the design document where it details all the where it lists all the technical details about building this application, like which framework is going to use, how it will generate the interfaces, all the diagrams, and how the application components are gonna interact, and equally important, how to make sure that the resulting application is gonna behave as it should. And now, once we are happy with the design and all the technical details, then we can click on continue and make Kiro generate the actual task, like scaffolding, divide project, creating the node interface. And again, we can follow the same approach. We can execute each task one by one, reviewing all the code, or we can let Kiro know that it should execute all the tasks and just notify us when it's done, knowing that we have already reviewed the requirements, we have already reviewed the implementation details in the design, and we know that Kiro is gonna execute the task in the way that we expect it. So I will do here and just wait until this is done.
Okay, so Hector, as you've told me before, running specs is not the most entertaining thing to watch. So we've skipped a little bit of ahead because one of our Kiro processes is now complete. The music is still cooking. We'll come back to that later, but our note-taking website is ready to check out. So let's take a look at what you and Kiro have put together for us there.
Sure. So it's basically a very basic application. Note-taking, nothing too fancy here. I can create a new note, adding, hey there, create a note, and we have that note here. I can find it, and I can remove it. Very basic. Now, I didn't write a single line of code for this. I just made sure that the spec was in sync with what I wanted the application to be. And
yep.
The same can apply to any kind of complex software where we can probably not generate complete applications in one spec, but
right.
At least make the decision again as the human in the loop of delimiting and scoping what the spec should be. And let Kiro help us with the bulk of creating these.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I wanted to ask you about was, you know, in what you just showed us with the note-taking application, it's functionally exactly what you asked for, right? But probably not something you would quite take to production yet. You're going to want to maybe add in some other visual design, or maybe there's just more functionality that you want to work on first, right? And that's one of the things that about spec-driven development that I think is interesting and I wanted to get your take on. You could take the attitude, I think, with this that, well, if I completely define everything I should ever need in the spec up front, then I can do a one-shot creation of my application and, you know, take it live because I put everything in the spec. I wrote every possible user story I could think of, right? You know, in the past, we used to call that as a methodology waterfall, and it wasn't very effective in terms of creating applications that people really wanted to use. And even with AI, you know, I worry some people will kind of slip into a waterfall mentality because they think, well, if I just completely define the spec and everything, then it's good to go, right? But in reality, once we see something, once we start to click on it, or even more so, once we start to show it to our users, there's still always, should always be iteration in that. That's part of it being a creative process, right? Same with music, right? You're going to listen to the song and you're going to go back and say, you know what? Like if I change that lyric, it's going to flow a little bit better. So let me do another round or whatever the case is, right? So talk a little bit about you know, you just showed a great example of doing, you know, relatively simple application, but a one shot at the note taking application. But how would you go about iterating that and doing a few more cycles with that after you were testing it with users?
Yeah, definitely. It will be very rare that we can create a complete application from one spec. As it is very rare to finish producing a song just with one spec. There are multiple features or multiple steps or phases into becoming the initial input, like the raw vocals or the raw instruments, and to convert that into the final product. The waterfall illusion is actually one of the main challenges of the spec-driven development methodology. The important thing to have in mind here is to not treat specs as something that has to be airtight, adjusted, but more like a living hypothesis of what we want it to be. And treat the implementation as it is, a discovery process.
I like that. I mean, it's a spec-driven development does create a bit of a contract between you and the AI, and you used that word earlier. Contract does kind of imply that, you know, once we sign on the dotted line, this contract has to be done exactly like it is, right? So I like that like living hypothesis phrase you just used. That's maybe a little burdensome for us to use and call it living hypothesis driven development. I can barely say it. So apparently that won't work, but I like the meaning of that. I like the messaging of that better, actually. So even though you're thinking about building this back, thinking of it more as like a living document that you are going to iterate on over time and then go through multiple loops with. Where do you think, Hector, that this goes in the next 2 or 3 years? Is spec-driven agentic AI, is this a transitional phase, or is this kind of a more durable, permanent model that we're settling in on for human and AI collaboration?
I think the main difference will be where the human is involved. I think that will vary, but at least from how things are right now, it will definitely not disappear. There should be always a human in the loop, and ideally we can focus on that spectrum that I mentioned before. We could probably focus on debugging the requirements and the design. Again, having in mind that this can and will change once we start with the implementation, as we saw in the music production. Well, the agent actually suggested to add one more adjustment that wasn't in the original contract.
Right.
So maybe we will move there to only debug the requirements or the contract, and then the actual master song or master audio or the code will become an artifact of that negotiation. The key here is find that right abstraction layer. Where do we feel comfortable leveraging AI, and where do we want to make that require intervention?
You've been using agentic AI from a couple of different perspectives now, in a very creative domain like music, and then also, you know, engineering domain. Is there a mindset shift that you would like to see developers and technical leaders kind of take away to work with agentic AI rather than just using it?
Yeah, there is one. This is not my phrase, but I like how it sounds. There's a misunderstanding, because when we think of artificial intelligence, there's an idea of what it should behave, but I think artificial is probably not the best word. A best thing will be augmented intelligence, because it's not, rather we are trying to replace us as the core force of whatever we are doing, is either writing code, writing music, whatever, but it's more of how we can augment that work, that effort, in order for us to be, you can say, more productive, or focus on the requirements, or focus on the implementation, whatever. The idea is to augment that, not replace.
Yeah. I agree 1,000%. It really is more accurate, I think, to describe it as augmented. And I think that's also really important for the mindset that people should take around this, because, you know, it does, as you were saying with music earlier, I mean, using these tools does allow you to focus more on the things that you love, or more on the things where you add the most value, or the things where just you have the most creativity that you know, the AI doesn't. And that allows you to do more, right? Like, you're probably able to create more music or distribute it more easily than you were in the past. And in the same way that we're able to create either more applications or more complex applications, or using technologies we aren't as personally familiar with, but it's not replacing the role of the software developer. It's really augmenting that mindset, right? And so, yeah, I really like that distinction as well. sounds like we have a final product ready here from Kiro. So let's go see what can you show us, and let's see, what can we hear?
Sure. So what we have right here is the list of effects that have been applied to my voice in this case. That is what the spec was about making sure that the voice sounds great. And all that work that Kiro did translate into this. In here we have an equalizer that was applied to the voice. It applied some specific settings based on what I required. And it also applied some compression in order to make sure that the audio is not too dynamic. And what that means is make sure that the voice maintains at a very stable level, that it doesn't have too much peaks, sections where the voice is too loud. So, and it did all this while we were speaking. So it actually freed me to do something else.
That's right. You and I were able to get more done while it worked on.
Yeah. Right. So I'm gonna, since this was mostly on the voice, let me to where we have voice. Okay, let me click play. Mi pasión, mi princesa, mi sueño hecho realidad, amor de verdad. And yeah, that's it. As a quick fact, I wrote this song for my wife when I was 17 years old. But now the lyrics could easily apply to my daughter. So it's like I wrote something for her before knowing her.
Right. That's beautiful. So this really is allowing you to not only express your own creativity, but I don't know a poetic way to say it, but I mean, brings together a theme of love through multiple generations, literally, in your life.
Yeah.
And allows you to share that with others through some augmentation from AI too. So yeah. I love it. That's fantastic.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, Hector, I really appreciate our conversation today. I mean, this has been really interesting and eye-opening for me, or maybe I should say ear-opening, since we've been working on music through this, but seeing how a tool that, you know, and perhaps there's a Kiro developer who will see this and say, wow, I didn't really expect somebody to use Kiro in this way. But that's really cool too, to be able to see the same sorts of workflows used in multiple completely different settings, right? You know, what we're learning as software developers and how to use these tools can also be applied to other domains. And likewise, well, there's probably a lot that we as engineers can learn from other creative domains like music in how they would apply AI to that. And so I hope that we will all continue to learn sort of cross-domain on that. So I know that for those who want to see a little bit more about the things that you demonstrated in this, this is up on the Agility Feet blog. Blog post up there, and we'll put that on the show notes for this episode of the Scaling Tech Podcast, and link out to that blog post so that you can see more of the details of what Hector's done there. And then you also write a lot on our the Agility Feet blog, but also our other brand name, WebRTC Ventures, webrtc.ventures/blog. So people can check that out as well. Where else, Hector, can people find your music or any of your writing, anything else that you're working on that you want to share? A man of many, many talents. So,
well, let me do some shameless plug and ask you Please. To follow me on Spotify, YouTube Music, Apple Music, whatever platform you are using. I'm there. Search for Hector Zelaya and please support my music. And for a more professional setting, you can find me on LinkedIn. My handle name is Hector ZG.
Exactly. Well, we will add the links for all of that in the show notes of this episode as well. Well, thank you. You've definitely shown the way for us today, Hector, with some really cool experiments with Kiro. So thank you very much. I appreciate all of the work that you do for our clients at Agility Feed and WebRTC Ventures. Really happy to have you in our team. And I really appreciate you sharing your expertise with us today on the Scaling Tech Podcast. Thank you, Hector.
Sure. Thanks again for the invitation. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Scaling Tech Podcast. In addition to bringing the Scaling Tech Podcast to you, at Agility Feet, we help companies to build tech teams across Latin America that are truly theirs. We can help you scale with confidence, with everything from staff augmentation to establishing your own technical center of excellence through our Build, Operate, Transfer model. We can do that for you in Colombia, Panama, Mexico, or elsewhere in Latin America. So check us out at agilityfeet.com to learn more. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Scaling Tech Podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're enjoying this episode. We'll continue to bring you insightful conversations about engineering leadership and building technical teams. To see our past episodes, check out scalingtechpod.com.